Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Mr. Singer, the President of the United States.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Just ahead on News One Now, President Barack Obama doesn't hold back in his final State of the Union address. We'll talk about this with California Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Also, we have a pollster, Cornell Belcher, and others on our panel. We'll break down what the president had to say. Also, who was he taking shots at in his speech? And also this call for civility, which obviously some folks want to ignore. And so we look forward to having that conversation. And so if you've been looking for how black folks feel about State of the Union, this is the place for you to go. We're about to have it right now. Let's bring the funk on News One Now. Let's go. Well, plenty of fanfare and energy last night for President Barack Obama's final State of the Union address, the seventh of his presidency. As expected, the president gave a what he called a non-traditional speech. He also said it was going to be shorter than previous ones. I think it still went a little long. Of course, now, even though he said it was non-traditional, doesn't mean that he didn't speak to several issues that he wants to see Congress address. He also gave what is described as a optimistic view of the nation's future and announced ways to protect the U.S. from ISIS and also boost the economy. We're going to talk about his speech with a variety of panelists, including Congresswoman Barbara Lee. But let's go right now. Let's play up some portion here of what he had to say last night so you can get a sense if you missed it. Most folks obviously didn't. And so here's President Barack Obama at the State of the Union.
So I hope we can work together this year on some bipartisan priorities like criminal justice reform and helping people who are battling prescription drug abuse and heroin abuse. Who knows, we might surprise the cynics again. But tonight, I want to go easy on the traditional list of proposals for the year ahead. Don't worry, I've got plenty. From helping students learn to write computer code to personalizing medical treatments for patients. And I will keep pushing for progress on the work that I believe still needs to be done. Fixing a broken immigration system. Protecting our kids from gun violence. Equal pay for equal work. Paid leave. Raising the minimum wage. I think there are outdated regulations that need to be changed. There is red tape that needs to be cut. There you go. But after years now of record corporate profits, working families won't get more opportunity or bigger paychecks just by letting big banks or big oil or hedge funds make their own rules at everybody else's expense. Middle-class families are not going to feel more secure because we allowed a tax on collective bargaining to go unanswered. Food stamp recipients did not cause the financial crisis. Recklessness on Wall Street did. And that's why we need to reject any politics. Any politics that targets people because of race or religion. This is not a matter of political correctness. This is a matter of understanding just what it is that makes us strong. The world respects us not just for our arsenal. It respects us for our diversity and our openness and the way we respect every faith. When politicians insult Muslims, whether abroad or our fellow citizens, when a mosque is vandalized, or a kid is called names, that doesn't make us safer. That's not telling it like it is. It's just wrong. It diminishes us in the eyes of the world. It makes it harder to achieve our goals. It betrays who we are as a country.
All right, folks, joining me right now, Congresswoman Barbara Lee from California. Of course, she was there last night for the State of the Union, also on the panel. We have Cornell Belcher, one of our top pollsters in the country. I'll go ahead and give you that shout out. All right, then. We also have Republican consultant Raynard Jackson and Law and Victoria Burke, managing editor, Politic365.com. Congresswoman, I want to start with you. The president started off by saying he didn't want to begin with a litany of issues he wanted Congress to address, although he did also reference the Affordable Health Care Act, which he just vetoed at the Republican Congress chose to pass. Your thoughts on this speech and the optimism, if you will.
Sure, I thought it was a very good speech. Someone asked me last night what grade I would give him, and I said A-. I think up front he talked about gun violence and some of the unfinished business of his presidency, gun violence, addressing issues around immigration reform, of course raising the minimum wage. Many of us think we need to get to a living wage. And so I think up front he talked, you know, very clearly equal pay for equal work, all of the issues that we've been fighting for so long. President acknowledged he's going to continue to work to achieve during his presidency.
One of the things that I thought also was interesting, first of all, we always look out forward in terms of those moments when Republicans stand up and Democrats stand up. We were all sitting here saying, if you were playing a drinking game hoping that Paul Ryan was going to clap, you're probably not going to get drunk. Because I think there's probably only a couple of times he may have applauded what the president had to say. And there were several issues where I thought it was interesting where Republicans did not embrace what the president had to say. Your thoughts about how does that feel being in the room on the floor when you sort of have that sort of back and forth?
Well, being on the floor is very interesting because in many instances, you know, you feel the Republicans wanting to clap, but they hold back. And so it's kind of like, why aren't you standing up and clapping if, in fact, this is something that you can support? Like, of course, they stood up when he talked about regulatory reform, but when he talked about, for example, you know, food stamp recipients didn't cause, you know, the meltdown, the recession, it was kind the recklessness on Wall Street. I mean, that's a fact. That's a fact, and they no response.
Right.
So
right.
I think that being there, you know, you feel some of them actually just don't appreciate and don't like this president and refuse to support any of his agenda. There are others, the more moderate Republicans, who I believe, even on issues of poverty and the issues we can halfway agree on, you know, want to clap, but for some reason they just hold back, and I can't understand that.
I want to go to our panel on that because the president alluded to that when he said, look, there are some issues that you do want to support.
Right.
And you told me that, but because you want to keep getting elected and because of your base, then you don't support. To me, that's one of the fundamental problems that we have of why stuff doesn't work in this doggone town, because there are issues that Republicans clearly want to embrace. They know makes sense, but I don't want to take the Tea Party off. Don't want to take the folks off at home.
But it started rolling. Look, this goes back to where the president started, and I was someone who was fortunate enough to be a part of that journey from the very beginning, back in 2007, 2008. The president started by talking about our politics was broken. And he started talking about how we can't solve the big problems that face this country because of our broken politics. Now, you can be critical of the president in a lot of areas, fairly and unfairly, but truth of the matter is, you know, he came out and talked about our broken politics, and to a certain extent, the election of him, this first African American, this first person where the vast majority of white people did not choose, sort of gave fuel to the fire of our broken politics. And when you see those politicians sitting there, clearly with the president talking about issues that certainly they could be on board on, and they can applaud for him, part of that is the broken politics that he's talking about and how we're, in fact, not going to fix the future. We're not going to win the future because of our broken politics. I didn't think it was a very political speech last night. I actually thought it was a more values-oriented speech last night when him talking about the stories about how America is better than its politics right now. I think it's a very optimistic sort of view of America. And by the way, it goes against a lot of the sort of negativism and the sort of breaking down and beating down of America right now. And whether you're Democrat or Republican, you know, you can say a lot about Ronald Reagan you say a lot about George Bush. No one ever thought Ronald Reagan and George Bush were mean-spirited, negative people. Now, the congresswoman might know something behind it, but behind it,
they also never questioned whether they were American or whether they were
true
American.
But they're optimists. But Americans tend to elect people who are optimistic.
Reynard, one of the things that I thought was interesting in terms of what the president laid out when he was talking about again various policies, and as the congresswoman said, Republicans did not want to move on certain issues, which was stunning to me because I think we can pretty much agree, as she said, we know who screwed up the economy with Wall Street. But what also I think was interesting is that in the presidential election of 2012, Mitt Romney said, you make me president, I'm going to get unemployment down to 6%. Unemployment is at 5%. You had Republicans who were saying, if you put Republicans in the presidency, then we're going to get gas below $3. You said $2. So what's interesting is that he's actually done what they all said he couldn't do.
That's not true.
Really?
Not true.
Did Mitt Romney not say, you make me president?
Those quotes are accurate, but the unemployment rate being 5%, what you all are not factoring into that equation is the workforce participation has dropped. Therefore, the numbers are artificial.
And so, Reynard, but didn't the president also speak to that last night when he talked about how productivity is at an all-time high? Because after this whole recession, corporations jacked up productivity, and they also saw an increase in profits. So companies said, hey, we don't need to go in and hire those folks back because we're still getting maximum output. And so corporate coffers are also thick with cash.
Well, and that's because of our insidious tax policy, both domestically and internationally. And what happens is, because of technology, our efficiency is going up. Therefore, we have fewer need for fewer people in the economy. So what needs to happen is more education and training to teach people to have more high-tech skills. That's the issue. So the unemployment rate in the black community is still at catastrophic levels. So this whole notion about the economy getting better, for who?
But wait a minute, hold on. But Lauren, on that point, it's interesting. Again, when I hear folks say, "Well, the economy it's still in tatters," numbers don't lie.
Right.
Lauren, go ahead.
No, we've never used workforce participation until Barack Obama came along. All of a sudden, now we're talking about the workforce participation number because the unemployment number, the overall unemployment number, is very good. It's at 5, right? It's like we're talking about foreign policy all the time. The Republicans were talking about domestic this, domestic that. Now we're talking about foreign policy because every time Barack Obama becomes good at something, they change the subject to something else. I mean, that's what they've been doing.
We're going to the black community to see if they're this optimistic about the economy.
Well,
They're among the most optimistic. The interesting thing is, you know, NBC and Esquire did a poll a couple of weeks back, I think it was, and they're talking about the anger, and they focused in on the anger. And what was interesting in what you, surprisingly, white Republicans are more angry than anyone else. And what was interesting is there's very little correlation between the pocketbook concerns and the anger. And in fact, if there was a lot of correlation between anger and pocketbook concerns, black people and Hispanic people would be the angriest people in the country right now.
That.
But there's not a lot of correlation right now between the pocketbook concerns and that anger. African American Hispanics right now are, in fact, the most optimistic people in the country.
I want to jump over in Elroy Saylor right now. Of course, he served as chief of staff to Congressman J.C. Watts. Elroy, your assessment of State of the Union speech last night with the president.
You know, the president always gives a good speech. You know, thanks, Roland, for having me on again. But, you know, my good friend Reynard, I would like to say, when I go back home to Detroit, when I travel to places like Cleveland, when I travel to places like Baltimore, when I talk to my family in California, I still see an undercurrent, and I hear an undercurrent of discontent in our community. You know, you look at our major cities, you look at the issues with police reform that we still need to deal with, you look at housing policies. Just in Detroit, my home city, the mayor of Detroit walked through the schools of four elementary schools, and the kids that were 7 and 6 years old told them that they have to wear their coats until 12 o'clock in the afternoon so the buildings could warm up. So we still have major challenges in this country: road infrastructure, infrastructure of our decaying buildings, Morehouse College, the HBCU that I went to. There are some huge problems in our country. So again, I give the president credit for trying, but I submit to our listeners and to our panelists, had this been a Republican president, I believe we probably would have seen a little bit more aggressiveness and a little bit more approach into solving
but
some of these problems.
When Barbara Lee and Emmanuel Cleaver go and try to have a jobs program in 2010, who stops them? Mitch McConnell.
That's right.
So, you know, you guys talk about the president hasn't done this or that. The Republicans stop him from doing basic things like jobs programs.
I can cite chapter and verse every time we try to put forth investment initiatives in job creation and workforce training and education.
Right.
Each and every time the Republican Congress wouldn't even let the bills come out of the Rules Committee. And so I've seen this president try to work with the Republican Congress to pass legislation and funding. I'm on the Budget Committee and the Appropriations Committee. There has been a huge disinvestment because of the Republican Congress in terms of urban communities, in terms of rural communities, in terms of the African American community.
Folks, hold tight 1 second. We're going to come back in a moment, continue our discussion about the State of the Union speech last night. Also, we come back with our headlines, including our U.S. soldiers being detained in Iran, being released. All of that next right here, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, news out of Iran. 10 Navy sailors have been released this morning from custody. The country detained 9 men and 1 woman yesterday. 2 boats were headed to Bahrain from Kuwait when they entered Iran's territorial waters near Farsi Island. Secretary of State John Kerry spoke with Iran's foreign minister, telling him the boat had a mechanical problem and accidentally strayed into the waters. Kerry says the foreign minister is demanding an apology for the encroachment. So still good news that our sailors are going to be released. Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan is calling on the National Guard to help with a water crisis in Flint. Snyder is asking the Guard to distribute bottled water and filters in the city where the tap water is contaminated with lead. We've been covering this story. It has been devastating to residents there. The water has been contaminated since the city switched to its water supply source in 2014. But Snyder didn't declare a state of emergency until last week. Recent blood tests show elevated lead levels in at least 43 children. Snyder has been fighting calls for his resignation after he said he didn't realize the severity of the water problem until October. Really? In an 8-1 decision, the Supreme Court has ruled the Florida death penalty system is unconstitutional. Juries in Florida only play an advisory role during the death sentencing process, while a judge can actually make a completely different sentencing decision and send someone to death row. Justice Sotomayor said, quote, "The Sixth Amendment requires a jury, not a judge, to find each fact necessary to impose a sentence of death." Florida is the only state that requires a simple majority vote to suggest the death penalty, and only one of 3 states that a jury does not have to vote unanimously for the death penalty. This decision could spark a slew of sentencing appeals for almost 400 inmates currently in Florida's death row. Folks, great news for a young Black Tuskegee University assistant professor. Dr. Hadaya Nicole Green has been awarded over $1 million in grant money to develop cancer treatment. Dr. Green says she was inspired to go into cancer research after losing her parents and other family members to cancer. Her treatment will incorporate her expertise in lasers and optics. She says she is, quote, completely overwhelmed with joy, with thanksgiving, humbled at the opportunity that a group of my peers thought that my work was worthy for such a grant. Well, certainly congratulations go out to you. And a New York City taxi cab driver is being reprimanded for refusing to pick up Today's Show weatherman Al Roker. The incident happened in November when Roker and his son attempted to flag the driver down, only to be passed up for a white man a block away. According to the Taxi and Limousine Commission, it was the driver's second refusal violation. He has pleaded guilty and fined $500. You know what? Slap with more fines. And then maybe he'll learn that you might want to stop to pick a brother up. All right, folks, coming up, we'll continue our focus on the State of the Union, and we'll also deal with what's happening in this so-called anger in America that is fueling the rise of Donald Trump, but also Senator Bernie Sanders. And so we'll break that down with our panel. Be sure to go to news1.com for more news as well as the latest happening in our world. I'm Roland Martin, back in a moment on News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now. with Roland Martin. Roland
Martin. Too many Americans feel that way right now. It's one of the few regrets of my presidency that the rancor and suspicion between the parties has gotten worse instead of better. I have no doubt a president with the gifts of Lincoln or Roosevelt might have better bridged the divide. And I guarantee I'll keep trying to be better so long as I hold this office. If we want a better politics, it's not enough just to change a congressman or change a senator or even change a president. We have to change the system to reflect our better selves. I think we've got to end the practice of drawing our congressional districts so that politicians can pick their voters and not the other way around. I believe we've got to reduce the influence of money in our politics so that a handful of families or hidden interests can bankroll our election. And if our existing approach to campaign finance reform can't pass muster in the courts, we need to work together to find a real solution. Because it's a problem. And most of you don't like raising money. I know. I've done it. We've got to make it easier to vote, not harder. We need to modernize it for the way we live now.
Folks, welcome back to News One Now on TV One as we analyze the president's State of the Union address. I want to deal with this whole issue of voting. I watched last night how folks reacted, and that still is a contentious issue. The Supreme Court made their particular ruling. You have Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, Republican, who has put forth a bill. He has fewer sponsors in this session of Congress than he did last year. Raynard, explain that. Explain how Republicans played a critical role in the Voting Rights Act in the 1960s, getting that passed, but for some reason cannot support or push the idea of full voting rights with no barriers in the 21st century.
No, I'm not going to explain it because I don't make excuses for that. I've had private conversations with folks in my party on this very issue, and they're being held hostage by political consideration. This is a non-controversial issue.
Such as? What political consideration?
Well, the South especially still has this crazy notion that, well, you're holding us accountable for what happened 40, 50 years ago. We're no longer the South then is no longer the South now, which is true. So they're saying, therefore, we don't need any legislation at all to be brought under the Justice Department, which I disagree with that totally. And our party is making a big, big mistake by not supporting Jim Sensenbrenner. He is a very well-respected person within the party, within the black community, and within Congress. And I think what his approach is worthy of consideration.
Yeah, Roy, doesn't this go to, again, when you talk about that lack of trust from African Americans of GOP policies, when if Republicans can't even stand up for voting rights, black folks saying, how am I going to roll with you on some other stuff?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's a challenge for our party. And much like Raynard, I've had myriad of conversations with members in our parties and leaders in our party on this very issue. You know, we Republicans will stand up for saying, well, we're seeing a little bit of movement where Republicans are standing up for saying we want to make sure that we have the right for ex-felons to vote through criminal justice reform.
Well, actually, some. You had, of course, former Governor Bob McDonnell in Virginia.
Well, some is better than none.
Well, no, but my point is, you just had the new Republican governor in Kentucky who is rolling back what the previous Democratic governor did in restoring voting rights for formerly incarcerated there.
Well, no, we don't have a disagreement on that issue. You know, the Republican Party on the issue of voting rights, look, we can go over to the Middle East and IRI and NDI and these various organizations can promote democratization, we can promote voting, we do all these different things, and we provide funding to do that. But when you come to our inner cities and our urban areas right here in America and our rural areas in America, we have a big issue, and there should not be a gap or a gulf on the issue of voting. Every American should have the right to vote. We should be encouraging voting, not putting up barriers for discouraging voting. I, for one, just don't understand it. And if Republicans want to have, you know, progress, and if Republicans want to have growth in the African American community, this will be an issue that we as Republicans will have to address.
Yes,
voting rights.
Congressman, go ahead.
I appreciate what you said. It's more than a challenge. It's insidious. The right to vote is basic to our form of democracy, as the president says. And in fact, when you have the lack of support, not only for a voting rights bill, but also attempts to suppress the vote when through voter ID laws, through, you know, shutting down voting on certain days, and all of the insidious kind of efforts that are being taken. You know, I really worry about the state of our democracy, because it's not just supporting a voting rights bill. It's the efforts to stop people of color and seniors and students and people in rural communities from voting, and that is very dangerous.
But Congressman, well, this is something I'm willing to work with you on this voting.
Yeah, yeah, but the question is, will Rice Priebus willing to work with
us? Between me, Errol, right now, we can put pressure on the outside to work with
Law on that. It's nice to hear these two Republicans, because yesterday at a forum during an interview in the morning, Bob Goodlatte confirmed that while he's the chair.
First of all, folks who don't know, Bob Goodlatte
is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, and he is not going to bring up any sort of fix to Section 5, and he confirmed that yesterday, and that is the leadership of the Republican Party. You know, last night I didn't realize, because I was sitting in the gallery above the president, above the clock, what Paul Ryan's face was until I went around to one of the front galleries, and I realized that I think Paul Ryan got up once when it was mentioned about how great our military was. That face that Paul Ryan has, which is a meme now on Twitter, is the face of the modern Republican Party, which is
crazy.
That even
that's
when
crazy.
You have sensible suggestions being made by the president, they can't
sensible
they can't
by
agree
whose definition though
voting? Like voting, you know, making it easier
really?
To vote, that's a big problem in the party?
Well,
of course,
that's not
when you're losing elections,
but
I understand
that's not crazy,
that, but
because the president's trying to work in a bipartisan
right.
way. He's
right.
tried to ask the Congress to put forth legislation
and
as it relates to gun safety.
Pull up my iPad. This is the face Lauren's talking about. That's it right there.
I mean, it's like, come on.
Are we really focused on a face,
yes,
a still
the
photo?
Of the House, the Republican
really?
Speaker of the House
really?
Of Representatives.
Do you realize that?
That's
under,
your party right
do
there.
Do you realize
on the
under George Bush, we had 8% of loans out of SBA. Under Obama, we're down to 1.8%, and nobody's
party.
Talking about it.
Stop,
You cannot say, not on this show, that nobody's been talking about it when, first of all, that story was ran in the Washington Wall Street Journal yeah. on March 14th, 2014. I read that story when I was in North Carolina in Raleigh, immediately reached out to the White House, dealt with the SBA for 3 months on it, and then met with the SBA administrator specifically on that particular story, has had her on this show on two different occasions. So I've been dealing with that particular issue since March 14th.
Well,
Wait a minute. No, but here's my whole point. You're not going
to
say nobody's talking about it when this host on this show, on this network, specifically has been talking about it and talked directly
okay,
with.
So well,
I am not done. And specifically talked about it not only with the head of the SBA, but also with the President of the United States.
Roland, let me just say the Bush economic policies led to almost the
worst. No, we're not talking
worst,
about what,
no, no,
what
no,
happened
I'm talking
to
about
it.
Economic policies under the Republican administration led to what almost became a Great Depression. It led to the Great Recession, where African American unemployment rate was up to 17%. It's down.
But
not
under
enough.
This
but
president,
say,
every economic indice from the black community is down.
Go ahead. I would disagree with that, but what I hope we all can agree with is this is something that's challenging, whether you're Democrat or Republican, it challenges who we are as Americans. And I think in this, if you're a sensible Republican, you're a sensible Democrat, you have to see that politics will play a part in this. You have to understand that part of this issue, if the Republican Party were winning 80% of the minority vote, it would not be a question. So the question is, you have good people on both sides of this who need to put our values first and not play a zero-sum game, because quite frankly, it is a zero-sum game right now, because as long as the Republican Party feels though they can't compete or they're struggling to compete with the growing new America, it only makes political sense for them not to want to have the new America
right
in there.
About black, you know, when we look at the economics of black America under this president, Raynard is correct. If we look at the wealth gap, If we look at the unemployment rate for Black America, we look at the poverty rate, it grew under this president. The problem is, he gets no help, Raynard. He gets no help from the other
side. That's a valid argument.
I mean, so I agree with you. You're right about the statistics. There's no doubt about it. I've written about it many times. But he can't do it alone. You know, the Congress appropriates the money, and he does need help on that.
An additional issue is that when we start, and I agree with you there, when we look at every ethnic group of people in the United States of America, there is no other ethnic group in the United States of America that pledges or provides over 80% of their vote to one party year after year after year. And Congresswoman, the CBC has done a great job. I was with Congressman Ron Dellums, my business partner, 2 weeks ago, and we listened to the Joint Center on Economic Report. 50 years later, this Congressman Ron Dellums literally sat in the room and started crying because almost 40 years later, we only have 2 African Americans in senior staff positions in the United States Senate. We vote 80% for one party. I think we need to go back to a phrase that we're all familiar with, no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, just permanent interests. When we continue to give more than 80% of our vote to one party, okay, it forces both parties to be in the quagmire.
Hold on one second. But Elroy, I understand that argument in terms of giving. African Americans are not giving one party our vote.
Right.
When you literally have a one-way conversation.
Exactly.
When you have Republicans, and look, I'm speaking from fact.
Yep.
When you have Republicans who are afraid to even talk to Black people,
right.
I'm going to tell you exactly what we've done here. We have extended an open invitation to any member of the Republican House Caucus and the Republican Senate Caucus. Any member. I'm talking about that member who never gets on TV. I'm talking about that person you ain't never heard of. And Elroy, if they are afraid to even talk to Black people, even afraid to talk about the issues, you're not going to get votes. And that's the problem.
And I agree 100%.
But here's what's going to happen. What's going to happen is when Republicans keep losing national elections, when they keep losing the White House, somebody's going to wake up and say, you know what, we can't ride just with white folks. We might have to broaden this thing. And so that's what you're facing right now. Now, hold on 1 second. I got to go to the break. And when we come back, I'm going to deal with that because the president spoke to this whole issue of, you know, targeting one group, speaking of course, obviously, about Muslims. What is driving this anger, this so-called white working class anger that's helping Donald Trump? We'll discuss that when we come back with our panel as well as we continue to break down the president's State of the Union address last night right here on News 1 Now on TV 1.
We're in the middle of the longest streak of private sector job creation in history.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
We just need to call them what they are. Killers and fanatics who have to be rooted out, hunted down, and destroyed.
All right, folks, welcome back to News One Now, TV One. We're continuing our breakdown of the State of the Union address. The president talked about civility. He talked about in terms of what has been spoken, even at one point said he was going to make his speech short because some folks in the room need to get back to Iowa. And so let's talk about, of course, the presidential campaign. Here's some polling numbers here. On the Democratic side, you look at the national polling data. Right now, according to CBS News, New York Times poll, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is at 48%. Bernie Sanders is at 41%. And, of course, let's go to the Republican side. Same poll, CBS, New York Times. Donald Trump's leading 36%. He's leading over Ted Cruz at 19. Marco Rubio, Senator Marco Rubio, is at 12. Ben Carson has dropped way back and tied with Jeb Bush for 6%. And Chris Christie is at 3%. Things have also flipped in Iowa. So what has happened there, all of a sudden in Iowa, you have Bernie Sanders. He's at 49 and Hillary Clinton is at 44. And what we keep hearing is this anger, the people are just mad, upset, and that's what's fueling the rise of Donald Trump. Cornell, I want to start with you, then I'm going to want to go to Raynard. We were texting about this yesterday because Raynard believes Trump is tapping into something that's significant, but he ain't saying nothing that's significant. So Cornell, you've been looking at the polling data. What's really at play here, even when you look at how things have changed with Bernie Sanders on Democratic side and then Trump still leading on the Republican side?
Well, listen, primary is about finding a niche and dominating that niche in a crowded field. The Trump, you say what you will about Trump, Roland, they will be teaching classes on the brilliance of this campaign a decade from now, because he's completely dominant. He's running circles around them in the media. And he got to that niche that was a anxious, you know, in 2008, there was two electorates. There was one that was comfortable with the changes that was going on with America, and there was one that wasn't comfortable with the changes that are going on with America. And right now, Donald Trump is speaking to that electorate, and he's dominating that niche, and he's running circles around them. And there is some anger. There's anger on both sides. Now, the anger has to do with a lot of things. And I don't want to beat up on people who are angry and anxious. I want us as Americans to understand why these people are angry and anxious, because things are changing. The president talked about this. People are afraid of change, and we can't play the zero-sum game.
But here's what's interesting. You talk about this anger, and obviously the first thing that he went after was the issue of immigration. That's what he's really been riding. I'm going to build this wall, and Mexico, y'all going to pay for it, okay? Right. And as I was sitting there thinking, when I was driving there this morning, I thought about the late, great Molly Ivins. A number of years ago, when she wrote a column, you had all of this anger in California with what was going on, with the economy. And they began to blame illegal immigrants. She said, you know what? That's cute. She said, it's always easy to blame a minority group when things go awry. She said, but let's really examine what happened in California. So she began to break it down. She said, base closures had a tremendous impact on the California economy. And she said, this is misplaced anger. You got these folks who are mad. I mean, I'm seeing these working class white Republicans who are taking these jobs, and I'm looking at machinists, and I'm going, but you're voting for a party that will attack unions. Then I'm seeing the same people who are talking about, you know, we need to bring manufacturing back. You got a guy, Donald Trump, who's selling hats at rallies saying, make America great again,
made in China.
Now, let's just strip away all of the drama. If you got a guy who's trashing China, who's talking about make America strong again, and he can't even find somebody in America to make his hats, how in the hell are these people not thinking like this? 2 and 2 ain't 7.
Yeah, but let me digress on that point.
No, Russell. Answer my point.
No. My point is, you all are making this argument about Donald Trump and the angry white male. There are tons of black folks who are supporting Donald Trump.
Who?
Please.
Who?
Listen.
I'm sorry. Hold up.
We wouldn't call.
No. Seriously.
Who?
I tell you,
right
I put
now?
You.
No.
Roll it. In 3 weeks, you're going to have a major announcement of a major black Democrat who's going to come out for Trump.
Where's the evidence? Have you seen polling data?
There is not a lot of polling evidence of that, but things could change.
I talked to folks all across the country, and
all of them.
Yeah,
let me know when you had a big black conference.
No. Roland, but my point to you is, a lot of blacks are not repulsed at Donald Trump like you all are trying to create this.
Oh yes,
character.
They are.
No, they're not.
Yes, Elroy.
I'm going to have to agree with Roland and Cornell on that. I don't know a whole lot of black folks.
I do.
I mean, I go to a black barbershop. I'm at a black church. I went to a black college. I go back home to a black city and my family is black. A whole lot of black folks that I know ain't supporting Trump. But here's what I'm disappointed in. A whole lot of black folks that I do know that have said, I like what Senator Rand Paul is talking about. It sends a pretty unfortunate message. You have a candidate who was in Highland Park, who's been in Ferguson, who's been talking about criminal justice reform, who's been talking about inequalities, who's been talking about housing policies, goes to Howard University, goes to Bowie State. You've got a Republican candidate now, so you start talking about that frustration in the white community, but you have a Republican candidate who's been speaking about these issues, and he's polling 4, 5, 6 points.
Okay,
first of all, he's polling that low.
Right, that's low.
Because Republicans.
And that's my frustration.
Because Republicans don't want to even hear from Rand Paul.
And so that's my frustration with
Lauren,
the party.
I have to say something here. I actually think the Trump thing, I know this has been said a lot of times and disproven, but until we see some votes, I don't believe the Trump thing. His type of candidacy is not proven. George Wallace, this racial, bigoted candidacy has never won. has never won Trump the last 50 years.
Trump is not a racial bigot.
So, oh, yeah, he is a bigot. And so what we have is George Wallace lost, David Duke lost, and Newt Gingrich's little attempt ran out of money 4 years ago. Trump, I think, until we see some voting on February 1st, I don't believe it.
That's fair. But here's the caveat. Here's what I think is the variable that's different.
Mm-hmm.
All those folks had candidacies that were based on the same sort of straw man. But they weren't looking at a country where the majority of the kids are now brown.
Yeah, but
they're not looking at a country where the change is real now.
But they can vote for somebody else. They can vote for Ted Cruz or somebody else. Let me tell you, this is another thing about Trump. We're going to find out how many racists there are in the country because when we get the results from Iowa and New Hampshire.
I think I know right now.
That person, the person who votes for Trump is voting for that bigoted candidate because you can vote for somebody else. There's a spectrum of Republicans there. You could vote for
and
Rubio.
That's what Ted Cruz
you
is hoping vote. For.
Exactly. And so I'm just saying, I think this is overblown. We'll see what the votes are in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Have we narrowed this conversation down to a binary racist versus non-racist? Trump is tapping into, do you realize this whole issue of amnesty for these illegal are going to disproportionately hurt the black community more than any other group?
He's tapping into bigotry.
Do you all understand these trade deals that this Republican Congress is pushing through with this president
and
is going to hurt
Haley,
the average working class American?
Right now, I need you to explain this to me. I need you to explain, and this is where I'm talking about brain dead people. If you can't even put two and two together, when a guy is selling hats that's made in China, you ain't down with America. You also have a guy who's a multi-billionaire, a guy who is trashing what people have done that he's taking advantage of. He has pimped the bankruptcy code. I want you to picture. You got white working class voters saying, Republican Party all these years, I was voting against, they have not been supporting the working class man, I'm down with Trump. Show me where Trump is down with the working class man. Show me where Trump is advocating policies that are specific to the working class people. This is a guy who has signed licensing deals with foreign entities to build resorts and golf courses. Right. Don't Trump not sitting here talking. No. I'm not talking about hype. I'm not talking about marketing.
This is a real policy issue.
But what he is doing clearly is sitting here, he's playing P.T. Barnum, and these folks are sitting here, yay, Trump
so
realized.
So what does that say about the electorate then?
No, what it does is it proves what Donald Trump said 20 years ago when he said, you know what, I can run as a Republican, say some crazy stuff, and they gonna buy it. He's actually proven what he said 20 years ago.
The Trump phenomenon we're speaking to is the discontent in the Republican Party, but in America in general. Yep. Republicans were frustrated in the last 2-4 years of Bush.
Mm-hmm.
They've been frustrated over the last 8 years of Obama. You have X number of candidates who are running.
But they're frustrated with what? Show me what Donald Trump is saying.
I'm not saying why they're supporting.
My problem is these Republican voters are in denial when they are, like the president says, about Wall Street.
That's
what I'm saying.
If that's true, why didn't Gingrich win 4 years ago?
4 years ago when he was running?
Right. He was the anger candidate 4 years ago. Why didn't Gingrich win?
Well, I mean, it would take a whole show to speak to that.
How big is your base?
Why did they pick Mitt Romney? Mr. Shut Businesses Down.
You see a lot of the frustration. The Republican Party has typically been an establishment-based party. We wait your turn. You know, you go to Bush.
Wait a minute.
But in those southern states, it's been a party, as Howard Dean said. They fell for the God, gays, and guns, and ignore their own pocketbook. Not they mad because they broke. Hold tight 1 second. I'm going to come back and we're going to have more with our panel. News 1 Now TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Y'all, well, we welcome back. Right now, I'm trying to figure out what in the hell Donald Trump has said policy-wise. Have you heard anything, Congresswoman? I haven't.
I have not heard one thing that Donald Trump has said in terms of the direction he wants to take the country. And he speaks to the anger, and he speaks to the fears, and he's not speaking to the goodness in human nature, nor in terms of what he thinks we can do together as a country. I think it's shameful that he's not going there. I want to point out
a polarization, because you talked about the polarization early and talked about how African-Americans are voting 80% for the Democratic Party and how that was problematic. The truth of the matter is polarized on both sides, and especially if, you know, go through the South, mm-hmm. and you look at where whites are giving the Republican Party 70%+ of that vote as well.
That's geographically based, so that's not race-based, because we talk
about race-based. That's race-based.
It's 51-49 or 49.
No. If Democrats were winning 49% of the white votes nationally, we would have won the White House every election since LBJ.
I'm talking about party representation, not necessarily just the vote.
I'm talking about demographics. I'm talking about how whites are voting. When you look at the exit polling and see how whites are voting, whites are giving their vote overwhelmingly to the Republican Party. And it was interesting.
Not at 80+%
It's by 70%
year after year, over the last
Hell yes. Look at the last presidential
election.
I'd love
to get those statistics last election, next time I'm on
Obama
the show.
Got what percentage of white vote?
What 38, 37?
Okay, 100. Hold up. 100 minus 38.
And when you look at, particularly in parts of the South, that number is even greater. My problem is that the polarization isn't just on one place. The polarization is on both sides, and as the minority population grows in the South, you're also seeing once upon a time Democrat could win in Georgia, but as Georgia becomes browner, the white voter migrates more and more to the Republican Party.
But Cornell, don't you think in general this whole base thing's a little bit overrated? Most Republicans fall in the moderate sphere. Is there any evidence that the base represents the majority of the Republican Party?
Well, the problem is, and this is what the president talk about right now, is gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is something we don't talk about very often. But you and I, everyone on this panel knows part of what's wrong with that Congress over there is that it's not about the middle of America.
That's right.
It's about the polarized.
And they drew it that way.
But you know what? There's another issue that neither party, if you ask me, talks about very forthrightly, and that's the issue of race and institutional racism. Mm-hmm. And until we really begin to address race as a factor in every aspect of American life, we're not going to get too far in terms of polarization. I mean, you know, institutional racism, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and all of the movements that are taking place now throughout the country, I think we need to recognize as being a movement that is necessary if we're going to move this country forward. And so race is a factor.
Shelley, go to my iPad, please. I believe in the facts. This is the NBC News. The white presidential vote, 2012, Romney got 59, basically 60%. McCain, 55. Bush, 58. Bush, 55. It dropped in the 40s. Dole, 46. Bush, 40. But in 88, Bush got 60% of the white vote. Reagan got 66% of the white vote. So the lowest Republicans have ever gotten in the white vote was 41% back in 92, when you really had this split Bush, Clinton, and Perot. So pretty much, white folks are voting Republican.
And they haven't voted Democrat since LBJ signed civil rights legislation.
Right.
And he said, there goes the South. But what he really could have said was, there goes the white vote.
So why is it then, and let's just push this question out there, why is it then that the Republican leadership and the Democratic leadership, they fight for the Hispanic vote. They both fight for the gay vote. They fight for the Native American. They fight for the Jewish vote. But you do not see both parties making a very, very aggressive effort.
Okay, hold on. I got that answer. Shelley, go back to my. Hold up. Errol, you just asked. Go back to my iPad. You just asked, why don't Republicans go after the black vote? I'm going back to my iPad. 59% of the white vote in 2012, 55 in 2000, because Elroy, they are
swings.
No, Elroy, they are specifically playing to white fear.
Exactly.
They're playing to that.
And there was a black and brown debate the other night. They didn't show up.
They couldn't even talk.
So are we saying that the black...
Stop, hold it right there. There was a black and brown debate in Iowa.
And they didn't show up.
Are we saying that the black vote is in play in the national election?
It's not in play because you don't make a play for it.
Let me just ask that question. The answer is no. Okay, so the black vote is not in play. So solution. What I would propose is that you take as many African Americans that are voting. You take 20% of us, you put us in the Democratic Party. You take 20% of us, you put us in the Republican Party.
That sounds great.
60% out, and we drive our agenda. And whichever party can speak to our agenda, that's where we go.
I'm going to break. You're going to rethink that one. Back on News 1 Now TV, one moment.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV.
All right, folks, final thoughts out with our panel here. Starting with Congresswoman Barbara Lee.
Well, African Americans, first of all, are very smart voters. They know which party has supported those initiatives, such as Medicaid, such as higher ed, such as the Department of Housing and Urban Development, all of the great society programs, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. African Americans know which party has supported these efforts to help lift, first of all, us out of poverty into the middle class, but secondly, which party has given us a shot at equal opportunity in this country and the American dream.
Lauren.
They know.
My final thought is that until the Republican Party lets go of the Southern strategy, this will always happen. They will never get black votes.
Elroy.
Look, we need to get in both parties and we need to fight for our issues. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. I want us fighting for our issues, and we need to be in both parties fighting for our issues,
Raynard.
Under this President Obama, black folks have suffered more than since any time since the Depression. The Republican Party has a great opening to take our policy into the black community and solve the problem.
I think black people suffer a little bit more than Jim Crow beyond the Depression. Go.
I digress.
I think that we're going to have to get beyond this. We're not going to win the future being white America and black America. And our politics are broken. And unless we fix this polarization, the future belongs to China and India.
Very simple, Republicans, if y'all want to get black votes, you got to talk to black people. You got to come where black people are. That means TV One. That means Tom Jordan Morning Show. That means black radio. If that doesn't happen, you can hang it up and you're going to be losing national elections. And so as Wesley Snipes said, Passing 57, always bet on black. Tomorrow, Tevin Smiley is here. I got to go. Holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.